the OTB Podcast Network.
What are we, 7:52? Let's welcome Graham Hunter to the show after a fairly dramatic day in the history of Barcelona Football Club. As Phil was talking about there, Bartomeu was arrested. Graham, I guess it's not a shock that Bartomeu was arrested, but it's still ultimately shocking that football authorities can be arrested for what they do and have done something that has merited us reaching this point, if that makes sense. I've ballsed up the phraseology there, but it is pretty shocking.
Yeah, good morning. I know that after such a long friendship, you're effectively checking. I'm not in the jail. I'm not broadcasting from Free Bumper Graham Casa. Shocking. You said a couple of things there that surprised me. That it wasn't too much of a surprise that Bartomeu was in the jail. There was a good deal of surprise yesterday, even though this is a year-long police and judicial investigation. By the way, Ger, and long live radio journalism. This started almost exactly a year ago when the local radio station, SER, reported that a group of senior directors and one non-director, but nonetheless a senior staff member at Barcelona, had engaged in secretly paying, breaking up the huge payments, €1 million, into smaller payments so that it could slip through the governance system at the club. So in other words, there's a real implication that this is not FC Barcelona per se, but a group within the club. Paid 13 Ventures, a firm, to besmirch various figures, including potential presidential candidates, Leo Messi and Gerard Piqué, plus Xavi. So when that initially, you don't want me to go through the whole thing about denial and then further proof and then a compliance officer and then Pricewaterhouse investigating and then resignations en masse of people who protested against the board with it from within their own cadre and then the resignation of the board. All of that has been going on for almost exactly a year. And it's been evident that there's been some form of wrongdoing. That much is proven. But yesterday people started to turn up at Camp Nou offices, Chair. And if they turned up by about, post-breakfast, they weren't allowed in. The place was sealed off. And a subsequent, the investigating police body here is called the Mossos de Esquadra. That's their economic division. They went into a number of private residences, plus offices at Football Club Barcelona. They went in there because they hadn't been getting the documents that they required. Anyway, long and short is that during that morning, it was pretty startling to know that four men had been taken into custody in an area of the city called Les Corts, where the Camp Nou is housed. And two of them were left in the cells, let's call it, rather than prison, the cells of the police station overnight. And as we speak, we're about 5 minutes away right now from two of those men theoretically declaring in front of a judge in the city centre of Barcelona. They've been taken from the Les Corts police station to declare. Innocent until proven guilty is a concept that functions here, just as it does in your country. So I know that the news has been rumbling for days. I heard you talking through there, and I guess that you reported some of it yesterday. But let me say that yesterday, when there were these arrests, it was pretty surprising. And if the allegations of breaking down large sums of money so that they could pass through from these group of men, exclusively men that are accused, to the company that was allegedly paid to besmirch these people, but more figures than I've mentioned. If that's true, if they're convicted of this attempt to create a climate favourable to the now departed president, there's jail terms hanging over it, if proven. And I think you tailed off your question by saying, is it a bit shocking that football club should resort to this? It's utterly imbecilic. as well as disgraceful. The idea, so many years after there were different elements to it, so many years after Watergate, the idea that you can do something to try and tamper with the climate in order to push favoritism your way and do so via a company, sneak payments out in order to create feeling that might help the outgoing board nominate a successor and have a sense of continuity for the type of people that are in charge of Oklahoma Bassana. The people taken into court this morning are only accused of this. They're not guilty of this yet, proven guilty of this yet. But that concept seems to me, I mean the word that I used, it seems imbecilic.
The timeline of Barcagate, Graham, and the fallout is interesting because I didn't realise, but it's like 6 months in between Bartomeu's resignation and the first reporting of Barcagate. When you see what happened yesterday, how did it take so long?
Well, there's been collateral damage. You're right about that timeline on, but this is what makes it still more pathetic because initially, of course, when the radio station broke, it was an absolutely brilliant honey trap, long live radio journalism. There was an accusation on a program. Bartomeu, then the president, came out and roundly denied it, threatened legal action. Of course, what they had the follow-up story, and they released very damning evidence. There was then a complete division within the board, which begins to account for the announcement of what happened in midwinter last year through to late autumn when Bartomeu and his board go. And what happened was the compliance officer, a woman, took all the evidence, presented to the board, or tried to present to the board. Bartomeu refused to have it presented. She presented it to a subcommittee and said, this is what the evidence says has been going on. She was fired. There was then an external audit which said, they've maybe been a little bit clumsy about some of the accounting practices. That external audit looks pretty flawed, to use careful terminology in retrospect. And it was only when, many times over the years, you've talked to me about Football Club Barcelona, once it became in vogue, people have asked about membership ownership. And that has begun in recent years to look a little bit of a white elephant, something that is known and is talked about, but was a little bit powerless. Well, what happened was one particular member who wanted to stand for president began last autumn to collect signatures for a vote of no confidence. And this process was fought against by the outgoing board, and there were all kind of obstacles put in the way, but the people spoke. And the board only left. They didn't leave out of, it's clear we've been found out, or we need to leave for the good name. They left because the baying mob with pitchforks and torches were queuing outside, the bad guy's mansion. And it was people power that forced them out, not dignity, not sort of a willingness to accept that they'd done something wrong. And during that time, I want to make this point. This is important for people listening, because we've talked about an unproven news story yet and wrongdoing by big guys. That's the stuff of every day at the moment, I think, in society. But remember that in, I think it was October, Gerard Piqué pointed out that one of the accused, who was the chief of staff for Bartomeu, Jaume Masferrer, had been suspended and suspended without pay in theory. This was announced midway through last year's Barcagate process. Suspended, but then it transpires that he's still on full pay and he's brought back into the staff. And Gerard Piqué spoke out and said that to be in this club and playing for this club is deeply wounding, to know that the guy who's alleged to have been using social media to crap on us and other players, legends like Xavi, is not only still at the club, but has been reinstated. And remember this famous bureau fact with Leo Messi, and Messi's press conference said, I've been lied to time and time again by Bartomeu. Well, Piqué first lanced that boil and said, when the allegations about the club using social media, paying a firm to consistently use a broad range of social media to damage us, to put us in a bad light, to undermine our credibility. I went to the president, Piquet said, went to Bartomeu, and Bartomeu said, I knew nothing like this. Piquet said, I believed him. Now, I feel like a fool. We were lied to. Messi's point about Bartomeu lied to me throughout the year. They're only in front of the judge at the moment, innocent to proven guilty. But the burden of evidence against them is growing, that there was outright malfeasance against their own players. The whole concept of what they're accused of doing is brutally wrong. But to do it against your own footballers, as you're expecting them to go out and, one, expecting them to go out and win trophies, and two, you're going to those players and asking them to take significant pay cuts because of the emergence of the COVID crisis. It's, if there's been, if once, if proven, then I don't believe there's been a bigger scandal in the history of the club.
What would the outcome be if this is proven?
If it's proven against the people who are the four men who are accused of it, and there might be further collateral damage. Those who are accused and who are standing in front of the judge right now, Ariana Hill, there is the threat of prison sentences. This is a strange country for carrying out the full weight of the law. Influence counts, and it's yet to be proven. For the benefit of the integrity of the law and for the benefit of the ball, it has yet to be proven. If proven, the penalty for the offences that they are accused of does carry jail terms of from months to, I think, a maximum of 4 years.
From the club's perspective, the damage to their reputation, is that the type of thing that actually a new administration comes in and very quickly is able to repair? Am I right in saying there's presidential elections this weekend? Could a new president make peace with Messi and with Piquet and with Xavi and say, we want you all to help us rebuild the reputation of this club and restore to the owners, the fans, the sense of we are a Messi-owned club as opposed to just a Messi club?
How long ago that phrase seemed to be not only in vogue, but viable. The answer is, Chair, if I'm honest with you, I don't fully know. Today will be a day of celebration. Yesterday and today will be a day of celebration in the households of many current players of the club and some ex-players. No question about that. Setting things right, there are three candidates, one of whom was pretty prominent on Bartomeu's board. So in the case that Tony Frazier wins, no. And I'm not a Barca fan, nor a Barca socio, but having seen him in action over the last, I don't know how many years, it would be devastating if that man wins. It's pretty embarrassing from my point of view that he's even got this far in the hustings. The other two candidates, Joan Laporta, carries his own issues into this, but he has been a steadfast critic of and opponent of Josep Maria Bartomeu, and therefore the answer to your question there is maybe. Victor Font, the guy who originally was part of the reason that the now departed board of Football Club Barcelona began to, how do I phrase this, allegedly began to think that they needed to create a climate of fear and dislike. Victor Font was the original reason. It was over a year ago. One, it was clear he was going to stand for the elections, which were always due in this calendar year, had to be held before this summer. The idea that Victor Font had such a candidacy, had such planning, had such appeal, it took root a year ago, and it was about Victor Font that there's clearly fear and loathing within the board of Barcelona during 2020. He is still standing, but Joan Laporta looks to have overtaken him comprehensively, stripped him of some of his policies and ideas. Were Font to win the presidency, yes, what you proposed there is feasible, that there could be a new beginning and a sense of, I have always stood for something different, I've never been on this board. With Laporta, he's such a clever, charming, politically shrewd man. The answer to your question is maybe, But this, what's going on now, will undoubtedly affect people's minds, socios' minds, before they go to the hustings and vote on Sunday, March the 7th. There will be a new president. You said, can they change the image? Can they heal the damage with the players? Honestly, as much as I'm used to saying bold things on off the ball, I'd ask you, let me use the phrase, let's wait and see, because this is a pernicious, still unraveling, acidically damaging subject. And let me put it like this. Were I Messi or Pique, I would be immensely slow to trust again the people who run the club, whether they're coming in fresh from elections on Sunday or not. And I think that would go for a number of the players who are not new to the club over the last 12 months.
In that climate then, if you were in Messi's camp, would you be recommending to get the hell out of here, that nobody's going to hold it against you given the absolute shit show that's happening?
Yeah, get your world's tiniest violin out, because, you know, effectively underneath all this, I suppose I'm saying you should probably feel a little bit more empathy for nearly billionaire Leo Messi, because it's not that simple. If you're advising Leo Messi, number one, you're probably wasting your time, because he's a very stubborn guy who, when he comes to a decision, largely it will be his own, and whatever that decision is, he'll stick to it stubbornly. But the ideas of changing country, changing language, changing culture, moving a family in the pandemic, uprooting himself from both the club and the city that he's known all his adult life, they will remain dominant themes over and above what he feels about the fact that the man who he claimed lied to him, the man who said he could go for free, the man who then reneged on that promise and did a runner. How well Joseph Maria Bartomeu sounds when you explain all that, doesn't he? What a lovely character. The very fact that there are now judicial accusations and police, two separate things, accusations against that man, might make you think, okay, once he's cleared up, I can say, or it might make you think, I'm not trusting again, and I'm going, okay, I take your point. But there are so many other big ticket issues that Leo Messi has to come to terms with, that I'm not sure this will be the deciding factor whether he moves to Manchester City, Paris Saint-Germain. I still think Inter Miami is down the line, not this summer, or stays at Football Club Barcelona. And personally, opinion based only, I think the chances of him staying, when you watch him recently and what pleasure he's finding in his football, I think the chances of him opting to stay, wanting to stay, are rising a little bit. Whether the club has the money to persuade him to stay, pay him to stay, that's a question for another day.
Graham, good stuff. Thanks a million.
Don't miss a second of the action. Subscribe now to the OTB AM podcast to get it every weekday morning in your podcast feed from 10 a.m.
17 minutes past nine on this Tuesday morning. Delighted to be welcomed and joined, rather, by Stephanie Roach to chat football. Stephanie, how are you getting on?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thanks. So you've been watching a lot of Manchester United recently, and we were chatting to David Myler yesterday about how Manchester United, if they want to contend at the moment, need to go out and get a player who will contend for golden boots first, and then the titles will follow. Do you go along with that?
I do and I don't. I think definitely they needed a proper number nine. I think that's been seen by Cavani coming in, and the times he's played, he showed how a number nine should play. I think Anthony Martial through the middle is probably one of the most frustrating players you're ever going to see. He has all the quality, but just doesn't seem to want to put the work in. But I do think when you look at the number nines that have been at Man United over the last couple of years, since I think it was Van Persie you were talking about yesterday with David, none of them seem to have settled. None of them seem to have, like, Lukaku came from Everton and he scored 26 goals a year before he comes in at United, and he scored 16, 17 goals. Ibrahimovic was similar when he came, probably similar ilk to Cavani coming in at that age and in his career, that time in his career. But I feel like there's still a lot missing. I don't think it's just the number nine. I think the right hand side of that kind of front three is so up and down. I think Bruno Fernandes, you're kind of dependent on Bruno Fernandes to produce a moment of magic. When he doesn't perform, nothing happens. And that's seen within the top six games, obviously, is being why people have been focusing on, because he hasn't really played well. and United haven't done well in those games. So I think, yes, I'd love to see a really, really top-class number nine come into Man United, but I don't think it's going to fix all the problems that are there at the moment.
Right, so the conditions actually aren't ideal for someone like Anthony Martial to get the best out of himself at the moment.
Yeah, I think, as I said, I think he helps himself at times. I think Cavani coming in has kind of put him to shame a little bit, because I think if you look at the likes of Harry Kane, who'd obviously be a great fit for Man United, because he's playing in a team where he's probably not getting the best of service, but he's making the best of it, you know? And I think that's something that, when you look at Anthony Martial, he's the type of player who doesn't seem to want to work. He wants to have a hand. He doesn't seem to enjoy football. There's just something there that's just not working for him. But I think if United could get, I think obviously they've been linked with Haaland, they've been linked with Harry Kane. Obviously Haaland's the issues with the agents that they've had over the years with Pogba and Raiola, I think is going to be maybe an issue with getting Haaland. But I think they still need this to shore up that right-hand side. I think Rashford on the left has done quite well. But still, again, I think he's been quite inconsistent at times. I think, as I said, in most games, you're really dependent on a counter-attack or a bit of a moment of magic from the likes of Fernandes or maybe Pogba when he's fit. So I think, yes, United need a proper number nine, a target player who they can work off and work around and be that central kind of pivotal player within the team. But they still need a little bit of more quality, I think, in that final third. And I think particularly the right-hand side, because you see Dan James has come in recently and done quite well. But in my opinion, I think he's a squad player. I think he seems to have the work rate and wants to do well, but at times he just lacks that quality in the final third. I think Wan-Bissaka coming down that right-hand side, one-to-one defender, he's probably one of the best you're going to come up against. But in terms of attacking down that right-hand side, he doesn't really offer a lot. At times, he gets it right, and most of the time, he doesn't. So I just think that right-hand side of the pitch really is an issue as well. And also, you can't just be dependent on, as I said, a moment of magic from Bruno Fernandes, which I think Manchester United have for large parts of this season.
I guess that perfectly explains why United were head over heels for Jadon Sancho last summer as well.
Yeah, and I think that's when you look at it and they kind of went out then and got Van de Beek, who we haven't really seen a lot of. I think that shows that really maybe Ole Gunnar Solskjaer didn't really want Van de Beek. He doesn't seem to fit what he wants within the team. And look, I think there's huge problems at Manchester United. I don't think it's just the forward. I think when we talk about the top six games, we talk about Fernandes maybe not influential in the game as much as he should. I don't think it's all down to him. I think it's down to the fact that United play a little bit more defensive. They bring in McTominay and Fred, which means really Fernandes doesn't get a lot of the ball. And when he does get the ball, it's kind of lumped up to him and he's expected to, as I said, to produce something, which is difficult for a player, because when you play against a good team who are managed well and have really a good defensive shape, they know to just mark Fernandes out of the game and they're probably not going to do anything. So there's a lot of issues within the United team. I think the central defence is just not good enough. And that's why I think against the big six in particular, United just don't seem to be able to perform, because they have to have two players sitting in front of them, which is usually Fred and McTominay, and that takes away from that forward play then, you know.
You look at a team like Manchester City at the moment, they've obviously navigated this season so impressively without Sergio Aguero. Gabriel Jesus has flattered to deceive at many times during his career, and they're thriving with a false nine, whoever happens to play there. So if you had to pick out a proper out-and-out number nine, with the exception maybe of Harry Kane at the moment, like, who is leading the light? Who is the leading light in the Premier League in that position at the moment? Like, who is the best at what they do in terms of being an out-and-out fox-in-the-box goal scorer?
In the Premier League or just in world football?
In the Premier League.
I have to say, I've watched a lot of Calvert-Lewin lately. I think he, in my opinion, if United were to go for a centre-forward and they weren't, I think if you look at Harry Kane, he's 28. It's probably now or never for him if he is to move from Spurs. Will United or maybe one of the bigger teams pay a lot of money for a player who maybe is coming towards the end of their career? Look, I still think he has a lot of time left. Haaland's 20 years of age. And when you look at Calvert-Lewin, he's 23, I think, and he's playing in the Premier League. He's proven this season that he can kind of do the hard, dogged work that's needed. But he's also a proven goal scorer within the Premier League, and he's 23, as I said, so he still has maybe a bit more improvement to come. So I think he could be a player who could maybe fit the bill at Man United if, as I said, they don't go out and get the star striker such as Haaland or Kane. I just think watching him, he seems to, and with Ancelotti coming in, he seems to be getting the best out of him. I think, as I said, he has room for improvement, but he's also proved that he can score goals within the Premier League.
Romelu Lukaku is somebody who's scoring lots of goals and playing quite well at the moment. Is there any chance that he might be the perfect solution to this conundrum that they have?
To Man City or to Manchester United?
United.
To United, yes, sorry, I was wondering. I was like, I don't think so. He's not going to come back to Manchester United, is he? I think the stick that he got the last time he was here, I think United, he just didn't fit the bill. He just wasn't really, didn't work. And as I said, and that's kind of where I go back to, I think the problems of Manchester United, it isn't just the number nine. I think it's the service that we get into the number nine. It's the play around them. It's they're counting on that counter-attacking footballer or, as I said, a moment of magic from the likes of Bruno Fernandes or Pogba when he plays. And I think it just shows that how badly, I suppose, he was treated when he was at United. When he went to Inter Milan, he's scoring for fun and he's playing really, really well. So maybe the system over there fits him better. He's playing with a player right up alongside him and they seem to be linking quite well together. So I think he's done quite well there, but I don't see him coming back to Manchester United. I know he was linked with Man City a while ago when they were having the issues, I think, wasn't he? So I just don't think he'd be back to Manchester United.
The problems that you're talking about Manchester United having are obviously deep-seated. If they don't trust their defence, that they have to play two defensive midfielders, if the only attacking creative threat that they have in those big games is Bruno Fernandes and the opposition knows this, it's pretty easy for them to mark him out of it or to deny him the service that he needs or the space that he needs to progress. That means that there's like root and branch restructuring of the team that needs to happen. So they're not really that close to being a title contender.
No, and I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, when he spoke, and I think I can't remember what game it was after, but he said that they aren't title contenders and it's other people saying they are. And I think really I'd say Solskjaer, looking at the squad he has, is probably, which I don't like to see from Manchester United manager, he seems happy enough with how they're doing because they are really a team that still aren't, they're not complete. And I think that's shown, as I said, I think in the top six, obviously when they played against Spurs, you had Matic and Pogba playing in there and you're expecting maybe Pogba to link up with the likes of Fernandes and have that extra bit of quality in there. But it showed in that game that they need to have players protecting those two centre-halves. It was Bailly and Maguire that day and sometimes it's Maguire and Lindelof. And I just think when Maguire, Lindelof and De Gea play, they just seem, they confuse each other. They make each other nervous. And for me, that's, as we look, if you look at the teams, obviously City have sorting out their defensive problems over the season. Liverpool last season, they sorted out the defence and their goalkeeper and they've gone on to do well. So I think you got to get the foundations right. And I think that's a huge problem at Manchester United at the moment. I think it's that central defence. And I just think they need to sort that out and then build upon it. Because as I said, I think in the top six games, it's quite clear to see that they just don't have the quality to get forward because they have to sit in there and protect that the two centre-halves.
When it comes to the Republic of Ireland then, Stephanie, it's a conversation we've been having for the last week or so about the starting team for Serbia. I guess let's just throw this out into the open. Do you have an idea of who you would be starting up front for Ireland in that game against Serbia next month?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I think you got to look at, for me, when I used to come into the international setup and I see players, you want to kind of see players playing who have been playing for their clubs. And that's probably an issue that Stephen Kenny's going to have because I think Adam Mida came on at the weekend and scored for Norwich, but he hasn't been starting. And I think when I look at the starting three kind of against Bulgaria, it was Curtis on the left, Collins through the middle and Horgan out right. And I think Horgan really impressed. I think he'd done quite well in those games. But again, he's not playing, he's not starting for his team. The last two games, I think he started the game previous, but it's about game match practice. And I think when you come in to play international football, you've got to be ready and you've got to be kind of at the top of your game. So I think he's going to have issues in terms of those players who aren't really playing. I think Ronan Curtis is playing quite a bit for Portsmouth. And in fairness to him, he done okay against Bulgaria, but just maybe lacked that little bit of composure and quality in the final third. So he's a player maybe who's going to come in with match confidence. Will he look at him again? I'm not sure. But I think he really has, he's given pretty much every player a chance in that top role, apart from maybe Obafemi, who's been out injured. So it'd be interesting to see who gets the kind of the nod against Bulgaria.
Shane Long an option?
Sorry?
Is Shane Long an option at this point?
I think he's done the right thing in terms of going away to get football. Obviously, he didn't start the last game for Bournemouth, as far as I remember, but he's got his goal. So he needs to get back playing regular football, and he's done the right thing, I think, in terms of going to Bournemouth to try and get some minutes under his belt. But it's, as I said, I think it's a problem for Irish strikers at the moment because I think people are liking to see these new players come in and do well, but they have to be playing at their club to be able to come in and perform at international level. And I think even if you look at the standard where they're playing, I think I mentioned Ronan Curtis, he's playing in League One, but is that a good enough standard to be able to come in and then perform at international level? We talk about the League of Ireland players as well. With Jack Bourne, he was pushed all the time to try and come in and play, and that was the question: is the level good enough? But I think, first and foremost, you've got to be getting minutes at your club before you can come in and demand to play at senior international level.
Stephen Kenny obviously likes Adam Ida. He's picked him whenever he's been available to him. He clearly wants to play Connolly as much as he can as well. Have you seen enough from Stephen Kenny to think that he actually just has his players? Like, you know, Shane Long wasn't in the squad before. It'll be interesting to see if Long, now that he has got his move, is in the squad, and if he decides that, okay, you are somebody who I can use in the team. Because it seems to me that Shane Long's pace off the bench would be a very good asset to have in any of the games that we've been playing in under Stephen Kenny. What's your good instinct about who the actual starting three will be that Stephen Kenny will pick then?
Yeah, I think, as you said, Ida has played whenever he has been in, and he seems to have the attributes that he wants up there. He's a big, strong fella. He's pacey as well. And I think he's a player who they can work off. I think Aaron Connolly, for me, is probably better off on the left-hand side, maybe with his pace coming down the wing. And like, for me, I think if I was to pick off the top of my head, I know McLean is out injured, the top three, I'd probably pick Connolly left, Ida centre, and maybe Horgan on the right-hand side, just because of how well he's played in the previous games. I think he's shown at times that he has a little moment of quality, which we probably wouldn't have seen before from him. I think he's been given the opportunity. And I think he, as I said, out of all of the top three, he's probably one of the ones that kind of, for me, surprised me and done quite well within them games. So they'd be my top three, I think, at the moment. And also based off kind of playing time, they're probably playing a little bit more than the others. Ida's obviously, as I said, come off the bench today. You'd like to imagine that'll give him a bit of confidence, the goal he got, and hopefully he can get a little bit more game time before then as well.
Stephanie, the news came through as well that the new TV deal for the League of Ireland will include the Women's National League being streamed for free. This is a big leap forward.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's great to see. Obviously, to be able to get information on the games is a first. I know last season, I'd be talking to my boyfriend after the games, and he'd be like, oh, I couldn't get any information on the game at all. So for the games to now be live streamed, it's a great step forward. And long may it continue. I think, as I said before, I've been constantly speaking about the Women's National League and talking about the quality that is there. But there just needs to be a better, I suppose, platform for the girls to play on. And I think if you can now show them that you're willing to show all of their games live so people can see it, I think it will definitely give the girls that little boost in terms of knowing that people care about watching their games and people care about showing them. And that's, for me, that's a big step forward for the league to see that everybody, or that all the games will be streamed live. And I think it's, as I said, it's a step in the right direction. And hopefully in the next couple of years, we'll see them on TV as well.
In terms of the other news that happened over the last while, Vera Powell has signed a deal to stay on as head coach of the Women's National Team. It seemed like she'd had unfinished business, and certainly the mood music had been that she would stay on. Is this the right decision for Irish football at the moment?
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, I think after the game, the last game, I think it was quite obvious that she wasn't ready to leave. I think herself, Eileen, and yeah, Willem, the goalkeeping coach, who kind of would have a big part in it as well, they seem to, this, as you say, have unfinished business. They're not ready to finish up yet. And I think it was clear to everybody that they were going to get the new contract. So it's a big campaign coming up now for them. And I'm sure they'll be working hard to try and get their squad in place and really push for it, because qualifying for the World Cup is very, very difficult. It's hard to get out of the group. So I think they've got a big job on their hands. But as I said, I think they're probably the right people to do it. There's no point in chopping and changing all the time. I think they've done quite well within the last qualifying group. So getting into the next one now with the same management is kind of just, you're starting from where you left off, which I think is good. And yeah, hopefully they can get Ireland over the line and get them to a major tournament, because I think it's something that's definitely missing from Irish women's football. I think if we can break that kind of, that hoodoo, we have never got to a finals tournament. So I think that can be huge for football in Ireland. That can be huge for women's football. And hopefully it'll bring us that step, that little bit further on. And as I said, it can only be good if we can get to a final. But that has got to be the goal. It's got to be qualifying.
Yeah, 100%. Stephanie, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.